a pre-recorded version of the WTK Roundtable on WTK, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
Fang is feisty now.
Oh, good.
He's feisty.
It's your word of the day, I think.
But he's not feisty like Nicole Forrester. That was a different feisty that she was in the show Boss. And different than her Dancing with the Michigan Stars routine tonight. But Ed is feisty for a different reason.
Sam, you've been feisty since Saturday night. I've just been feisty this morning.
You know, there's certain things that you can see. First of all, this segment is such fun every single week. It's especially fun after, John Beilein's team goes out there and crotches in some threes and has weird
one guys. Three.
It has some strange weird guys.
Some weird guys.
It's some other threes. En route to victory, that makes days like today, segments like this one, a lot more fun. We call it the MGO Blog Roundtable with Brian Cook from MGO Blog. Brian, good morning. How are you?
I'm good.
We have Craig Ross on the phone, the venerable one. How are you this morning, Craig?
I'm doing great, thanks.
And then we have the man that predicted Michigan State. He predicted Michigan State was going to beat Michigan, despite my warnings. The scouting report from the first game.
If you think he's ever going to let this go. Like, he still brings up a hockey game from like 8 years ago.
Say over a half a decade ago.
The matchups were so clearly in Michigan's favor. They weren't going to get better. Regardless of what Tom Izzo says. Now, Ira, what's that quote that Tom Izzo gave about he gave a
the one that
about,
I sent you yesterday?
Please, John, Winston. Not in the face.
Yeah, no. The one that I gave you yesterday. So on this was Izzo on Cassius Winston's shooting. He said, Cassius has been so good shooting 56% in his offense. I think he was 1-for-11 from three in the Big Ten tournament. He was leading the nation in three-point shooting. And I think sometimes the offense affects your defense.
Yeah.
That's a good excuse for your player. That last sentence,
the offense affects your defense. There's truth in that statement in a general speaking, in this case.
He could hit 100 threes in a row, and he still wouldn't be able to guard Xavier Simpson. It's just physically, he cannot do it. And the problem for Michigan State is Michigan is not a team that you can cover up. Cassius Winston's defensive inadequacies, because their bigs pull Michigan State's bigs out of the lane. That shot blocking eraser for his defensive issues, just they aren't there game.
Michigan's five erases their shot blocking, and then Tom Izzo erases their shot blocking.
This is true. So Ed Fang,
what's up?
I know you were happy, though. You were happy. Unlike a guy like Phil, who we haven't heard from, you're happy that you were wrong about that.
Of course I was happy I was wrong. I was wrong on both games. Yeah, and it was the most satisfying two-game stretch ever. I think I got to put the Florida game from 2013 over those two games. But, I mean, over that two-game stretch, beating two legit, I think, top five teams in the way that they did, the way this team played defense, was fantastic.
And the coaching on this team is so good, guys. You go back to, we sat here, Miz and I, last Friday. Was it Friday? Yeah, because I did the Spath show. And we were talking about the upcoming matchup with Nebraska. And I said, look, Michigan has done a much better job of dealing with teams that are going to switch everything. Ball screens. Off-ball screens, they switch everything because they have the length and athleticism to do it. So look for Michigan to look for them to incorporate some slips in the game today. And sure enough, Beilein used his screener like a chess piece in that game, and they dismantled Nebraska.
Well, they dismantled Nebraska on defense. I mean, there was that stretch where they were 1-for-20 from the floor, and that didn't really feel like a fluke because all of those shots that went up were bad shots. Like, by the second half, Glenn Watson, who's like a 38-29 shooter, was taking Xavier Simpson off the dribble and rising up from 18 feet. And that he felt like that was Nebraska's best option, and he might have been right. So it was that was a real wake-up call. And the one thing I didn't like about the Nebraska game is they kept driving at Roby on the switches. And Roby, that guy is awesome. Like, he is an awesome defensive player. And so everybody tried it. And not like he blocked a lot of shots, got a lot of bad shots up. But Michigan was still distancing themselves from this team because they were absolutely dominant on defense.
Do you feel I'm curious your take, Craig. I said after the game that I thought that was Mo Wagner's best all-around game. He had scored more points in some games, but a double-double, and I thought on the defensive end of the floor, man, I thought that was his best game.
I'll still take 27 points at Breslin.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with Brian that Nebraska was a phenomenal defensive game. I mean, Nebraska scored 36 points from the floor. That's it. And they're not a terrible offensive team at all. And so they really – I mean, no Nebraska player made more than four baskets in the game. And I felt this was the one game, however, where Michigan also shot the ball. I think they made almost half their threes. They made 80% of their free throws. And I agree, Mo had a tremendous game on the defensive boards in particular, and also shooting it. The interesting thing to me in the Nebraska game was that at the end of the first half, Tim Miles went into a 1-3-1, and he cut the lead from 18 to 10. And there were six possessions, and we had two turnovers out of that, and only 4 points in the six possessions. But I figured Nebraska was going to come out in the second half zoning, and they didn't until later in the half when the game was almost done. But he must have known that the zone was fool's gold because Michigan scored 8 points on three possessions.
Yeah.
The next time they went into that zone, and that was that.
Well, because I remember – posting this in our live thread, said, you know, that's a mistake. I mean, I guess you had no choice but to do it at that point. But you went into your defensive trick bag before halftime, where now Beilein is able to go in and make his adjustments. Dude, it's over. This game is over.
It started.
And Michigan, you know, they do this to Michigan State, so they go to the locker room. They've had 13 points in the last 17 minutes since their explosive start. They haven't been able to get anything going on offense. And then Beilein moves his chess pieces around the board. Michigan starts that half with a 10-2 run. And I think it was a little bit later in the second half against Purdue when Michigan really extended it. But it was 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes into that half, and Michigan gets out to that double-digit lead where they really take control of the game.
Yeah, Paint said at halftime, he said, man, we're fortunate. I mean, Michigan's missing. They're missing good shots. Mo Wagner missing great shots.
You see why Painter was doing the whole switch everything thing early in the year, because Michigan has 13 threes, and I think every single one of them was a good shot.
Good shot, right.
And so Painter goes – I think Painter knew. Painter knew what he was doing wasn't working, and what he had in the tool bag also wasn't going to work, because it's something that Michigan had seen before and – was prepared to go at. So, you know, I at points he kind of like knew that he was a dead man walking, which is interesting because, you know, he gets some slack from Purdue fans because he hasn't put up a banner. But, you know, he's got a really interesting team. And I think, you know, Beilein and Painter have a genuine affection for each other.
I think so too.
You can just, when they interact, they're happy that they're playing Michigan or Purdue, and given the quality of these games, I agree. I love playing Purdue.
So Ed, you know, very interesting in that game. You know, it's my belief that Carson Edwards, if he's not the best player in the Big Ten, he's certainly one of them. Mm-hmm. Michigan did a tremendous job on him defensively. Yep. It was not just Xavier Simpson, but
it was mostly Rock.
Right. But I'm segueing to a Xavier Simpson point.
Okay.
Every guy that he faced in this tournament, he blew up. He blew him up, man. Mm-hmm. I mean, Bohannon had a great game the night before they played Michigan, and I know he made a three basically to send it to overtime. But
yeah, it was from 30 feet.
Right, and that was one of three shots that he made. You know, you go into the next game. You mentioned Watson, Glenn Watson. Yeah. blew Glenn Watson up, blew Cassius Winston up. I guess Cassius Winston, he just had a bad game shooting just because.
And at the beginning of that game, Yaklich puts him on Bridges,
right.
And that turns Bridges into this jump shooter because he's like, oh, I can shoot over this guy. You're like, yeah, but you're going to miss. So like that was I saw that happening, and you know, man. The announcers are like, that's a switch. And I'm like, that is not a switch. That is just
– you know, I thought
it was you got to admit, the first time you saw it, it looks like a switch.
Like yeah, you're right.
I thought it was a switch too. And, you know,
Until it happens again and again.
He's like, no, that's the design. He's starting out the game with him on Miles Bridges. Yeah. So that guy is just an elite defender.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I love watching that kid play. I mean, it almost boggles the mind that he didn't start a couple games earlier this season, right? With the way he gets after it on defense and what he's been able to do.
Well, he wasn't doing anything else. And
right, he had six twos in his first nine games.
Yeah, I mean, we could also talk about he's bricked like 80% of his threes the last part of the season.
But it doesn't – that to me, so what? Because he is so adept at getting to the rim. And this was key in the Purdue game because I went back and watched both Purdue games. And he played – Xavier Simpson played great in both of those games. And the reason why is he would attack switch. He could still – even when they switch on him, whether it's Haas or another big, with them sloughing off, he's still quick enough to still get by, to still get by and finish at the rim. If the defense collapses, he was able to find the open guy on the perimeter. I think he had in the two regular season games 10 assists and only two turnovers. That guy is he's more than just if he was only a defensive guy, he wouldn't be. Michigan wouldn't be where they are if he was just playing defense, but he is a playmaker on offense right now for him, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm a big fan of the kid.
Like, he gets switched onto Haas, I believe, and he's in the corner, and he makes that drive where he uses the hoop to prevent a block. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's what you need to do. He's become very crafty at getting shots up. Like, he's got that sky hook.
Yeah, Beilein says he practices the heck out of that.
Yeah, nice. And he's also like there was one shot he flipped up, and then he just kind of held it, and then he looked at Beilein. He was like staring down his coach because Beilein didn't think that would work in a game. And he's like, I'm going to put it up anyway, and there you go.
So we've been using the word crafty for him for a while, and I do want to mention Brendan Quinn this morning dropped released a really long article, a really good feature on Xavier on The Athletic. So if you're a subscriber, nice. You can read it. Or if you're not a subscriber, you can subscribe. But a really nice feature on Xavier Simpson this morning that now the nation will get a chance to learn a little bit more about Z.
Yeah, he, you know, his dad, Quincy Simpson, is, I mean, just that pit bull mentality was one that was instilled in him. And so you can see, and the part that I think is really infectious is you can see his impact on the other guy. I mean, if you aren't coming with the same sort of effort defensively that he does, he's letting you know about it. And that kind of permeates the team now, that attitude.
Yes, it does. There were a couple of scuffles earlier in the Michigan State game, and if you watch the Journey video, you can do a little lip reading. I won't spoil it for you, but Charles Matthews got a little aggressive.
And Nick Ward's face.
And Nick Ward kind of lost his cool, and there you go. He's got 10 minutes in this game. He gets a tech. And Michigan's that kind of team now where they're not going to –
Well, don't you guys find it a little bit ironic that, you know, Miles Bridges keeps trying to call Michigan saying, oh, they're not tough. But I was reading in one of those articles recently and Miles Bridges by scouts was called soft.
Well, see, the thing is, and I felt like this was an element of that game, that Michigan State, they were going to come out and try to set a physical tone. And essentially they were going to try to punk Michigan. They were going to try to impose that physicality that they didn't think Michigan was capable of matching. And in that one play, Brian, to your point. They let it be known that that's not going to work.
Right. Well, but their offense was just contested jumpers the whole game. So, like, you can be as tough as you want, but if you're not getting the basket, you're going to take bad shots, and then you're not going to get offensive rebounds because you're not rotating the defense. So,
yeah, and
isn't that somewhat mystifying? I mean, there were six possessions where either Simmons or Z was checking Bridges. And he never went down into the paint against him. He just tried to shoot over. You look at that MSU game and you see a team MSU with two
that's coaching.
Lottery picks.
That's coaching.
Yeah. at two lottery picks, and three other guys will probably play in the NBA. And Michigan's in a game where they shoot at one point 4 of 24. Moshu starts out the game 0-8. He's 1 of 7 from 3 for the game, and yet Michigan still won, and to some extent it wasn't even really feel that close.
Yeah, if you have Jerron Simmons and Xavier Simpson on Miles Bridges, and your team comes down the floor and Miles Bridges is not in the post, why aren't you calling timeout? Say, this is what we're going to do. We are getting the ball in the paint.
Well, does he post up?
Yeah, he posted up in that game.
He posted up once.
But he posted up effectively.
No, I'm just saying, because that is part of his game on a regular basis.
They were trying to run the whole offense through Bridges down the stretch. And Michigan pushed him out to the perimeter and made him face up and go. Mm-hmm. And he was still taking jumpers for the most part. Like, he got one, like, bucket at the basket when Rock got moved on a moving screen. But he wasn't able to stick in the post. So
it's almost like they can't get away from the plan, their game plan, what they had going into the game. Like, on the fly, you see Xavier Simpson on Miles Bridges, and you can't adapt to that. You can't adjust your plan to take advantage, to try to exploit that. The only way you can try to exploit that is he wants to shoot jumpers anyway.
He does.
This is what he does anyway. Maybe. Mm-hmm. You try something different, and the commentators, they were incredulous about it. They were like, how is he not in the post right now?
I think that's just something that Michigan recognized that is a tendency in his game and decided that they could exacerbate it by putting his on.
To me, it was yet another advantage for Michigan. We talk about the advantages on the court where Cassius Winston can't guard Xavier Simpson. Their bigs can't stay with Michigan on the perimeter. Tom Izzo got out-coached, period.
For the third straight time by Beeline. Probably more than that, but three straight.
So. Yeah. Why did Ward only play 10 minutes and Jackson 24?
Because, well, Ward in specific is a bad matchup for Mo, and also Izzo hates him. And vice versa. And Xavier Tillman was actually playing pretty well.
He was. Yes, he did. 734-998-1050. We'll get back into it on the other side. I want to get Ed's take on seeding. You know, I said the Purdue game is the one that has made me henceforth and forevermore. It's made me stop qualifying Michigan's defense. You know, they're better than they were. And they are a good defense, absolutely. What they did in that game, and I talked to Beeline about it earlier this week, you watch the two games during the regular season, Carson Edwards would come off a ball screen, and there would be some space there. And he would make them pay every time. This game, stifling. As soon as he came off that ball screen, there was no space there. Every shot was contested. Vince Edwards, they did a good job of making him put it on the deck. He made some plays, but he wasn't nearly as effective as he was, and certainly in the game in West Lafayette. It was just a defensive gem. We've seen several of them this year from this team. Yeah. And I wonder if this caller is ready to call Michigan a good defensive team. No. You think he is ready to call? It's not.
Phil was way too chicken to call.
We haven't heard from Phil. We won't hear from Phil until Michigan loses.
That's so hopefully a very long time from now.
Right. But Mark and Lansing, who I know is a stickler for good defense, are you ready to call this a good defensive team?
Yeah.
A little reluctant in there, Mark.
Well, hey, they've gotten better, man. Yeah, I was kind of like you, Sam. They're getting better. And not good yet, but at least average. And the Purdue game was a difference maker for me too, insofar as my assessment is concerned. Absolutely. And the reason why I asked your question about Jackson, with the way Michigan State runs their stuff, he's a man without a position. If you notice, most of his points are either 3-point crazy shots or putbacks.
They don't
run anything. They don't run anything for him. And one of the reasons they don't is because of the way they play their center. And their centers are relatively poor passers, so that's why he gets the minutes that he gets. And you're right, Brian, about Ward. Ward is, you don't like Izzo, and Izzo don't like him. And if you could indulge me, I have two questions. One is, if you were to assign the responsibility for the improvement in the defense, would it be more personnel or more coaching, or can you not split it up? But if you could apportion that, I'd kind of like to play around with that a little bit. And then two, when it comes to teams that in the NCAA tournament that you say, I'd like for Michigan to have to avoid that team or that kind of team, I'd like to hear that too, because right now I really don't know what the weaknesses are. For example, I hear that maybe you don't want to see them play a team like Syracuse or a heavy zone centric team, but I'd be curious as to what your thoughts are on that.
Give me that. I take that.
Syracuse in particular isn't a very good team, but I do kind of agree that I don't want to see them play a zone because they don't have real rise up shooters.
I disagree with that.
I
mean, like Simpson isn't going to be a rise up shooter. Duncan isn't really a rise up shooter. Like,
see, but I think.
Come on, man.
I don't think what Brian is saying is ridiculous, because Michigan did struggle with the zone.
Yeah.
They
had that clunker against Northwestern.
I think that the plan, though, the plan that they have, their zone attack plan, is good, and I think they started to work it better as the season went on. So probing the zone with the pass and the bounce, they got much better with that. I think they've identified the guys that do well in the mid post. So Charles Matthews, they flash him. They flash Duncan Robinson. And Z is still able to dribble. Both Z and Rock have been able to dribble into zones effectively. I think that they.
It's better. I still hate it.
I hear you.
We show me a 2-3. I'm like, oh, we're just going to stare at this for 25 seconds for about 5 minutes.
I think that is a very good observation as well, because it's like. Every time they face it, it takes them a couple of minutes to adjust. So they look crappy for a couple of two, three possessions, and then all of a sudden it starts kind of like what Craig brought up with the 1-3-1. I just knew the time at which they brought it out. It's like, this is you almost needed to go into the break dealing with whatever the consequences were for staying with the defense that you had, because you weren't going to be able to do it in the second half, because Beeline was going to have the adjustment ready. Because there is an adjustment period for
them. In terms of teams that Michigan wants to avoid, I kind of want to avoid the mirror matchup. So if you give me a West Virginia, I'm all about that. Because West Virginia is highly dependent on turnovers and transition, and Michigan doesn't allow either of those things to happen. So I think that would be like the VCU game. if you give me a matchup like Purdue, where you've got like a really traditional big, I think Michigan can exploit that more than vice versa. Uh-huh. If you give me Duke, if you give me Villanova, you know, that's kind of like not a great fan of
it. Virginia?
So I would be fine with Virginia, to be
honest. So Virginia's a really interesting team, because they play this so-called pack line defense, and the thing is, you can get threes off. I mean, they're contested, but you can shoot threes against that team, and it's just interesting watching that team, like how good they are statistically defensively. Like, there's a couple guys that don't strike fear and use defenders on the perimeter that you can get to the basket on.
Big divide in the one line right now in advanced stats. So Villanova is really well regarded, and Virginia is really well regarded. Kansas and Xavier, not so much.
Well, Xavier's outside the top 10 in most number systems. Yeah,
Michigan would be a KenPom favorite against Kansas or Xavier. So that's a pretty clear desire. And then on the two line, you got Duke, you got UNC, maybe Purdue, but Michigan probably not going to be in the same region as them. And then who's the?
I mean, I've seen more Michigan States as two lines than Purdue's.
I don't think State's going to be on the.
I mean, on ESPN they have them as a two.
No, if Purdue is a two, and Michigan State is a three.
Yeah,
on Lenardi.
Really? I thought I saw the opposite.
The only team that I really want to avoid, you know, we talk about the ones and two seeds. I don't really want to be in the same region with Duke, because Bagley is that freak athlete that is hard to manage. But just about everybody else, I wouldn't mind.
But this is also a team that 3 weeks ago decided to start playing zone defense. Which is just freakish, because Coach K has never done that in his entire tenure.
He did it a couple years ago.
It is a little desperate.
But it also worked. They held teams that are like three or four teams in a row to under 60 points, and they were playing better, and it worked.
I like the idea of Michigan's offense against a Duke zone defense. I mean, I think this team is cerebral. I think they'll move the ball, and they have enough shooters, and they have enough crafty players that they're going to get.
Well, I want Duke. I just would prefer them on the other side of the bracket and play them later.
And I think this speaks to like college basketball this year. There's no favorite for this tournament. It is as equitable as I've ever seen this team.
I mean, if Virginia didn't have a history of flaming out, they would be pretty.
Well, but
they have a history of flaming out, so they're going to get that.
Virginia doesn't have any NBA talent on that team, right? They started the preseason outside the top 25.
22 in the ACC.
And they had that miracle game they won at Louisville.
I mean,
but they went to Cameron and they won. They've got some really good
wins. They're a good team.
But they don't scare me.
They scare me a lot less than Virginia 2 years ago when they had Brogdon and Prentice and like two legit NBA guys with the same system. Villanova's got a stretch four as their big. Does that scare you?
A little.
No,
because I don't want the mirror matchup. I don't want a Michigan-ish team because I feel like
what you know is this team is going to bring it defensively every game. I think they're going to be in every game. I just don't see a scenario where they get they lose a game because they the other team ran away from them like
Nebraska.
Exactly.
That hasn't happened since Nebraska. I don't expect to see it again.
That was scheduled, you know.
Right. Exactly. That's my
point. Well, now we got 2 weeks of rest, which Craig Ross believes in.
Mark asked, he said, you know, how would you portion the credit for the defense? Can you assign it one thing? I don't think you can parse it like that. I think it's all those things. I think you have personnel that's better.
Yeah.
I think it's that you have, Luke Jokličić and the effect that he has had on this team. I mean, look at their pick and roll defense and how good it is now. Yeah. And how they play it multiple ways.
I think they're in the 92nd percentile.
They are in the 92nd percentile. It was the 43rd last year. That was in that NBC sports story where they put that stat in there.
We also have synergy, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. I guess that's where he said he got it from. We had been talking about Michigan's pick and roll defense for weeks. Like, man, it just looks better. It looks better because you watch them and they don't just hedge and recover. They don't just switch. They don't just fight through. They do all those things. Yeah. And when you look at how well they rotate behind it. That is where the secret sauce is, where you see how well they help the helper, how well they get back. They get back defensively out of their rotation. It is.
Yeah, I think Purdue had Michigan missed a rotation and Purdue had a dunk and I was shocked.
Right.
And I was like,
right. That doesn't happen.
I'm shocked at this. And all of the dunks that Teske got on the pick and roll against Purdue, how often does that happen against Michigan? It's once in a blue moon. And that, you know. And in that Purdue game, they were hedging harder than they have all season because, as you mentioned, they weren't going to give Edwards, they weren't going to give Dakota Mathias room to do what they do, which is hit more threes than anyone else in the country, at least in a per-three
rate. I mean, that's a really good point. I mean, Purdue, not only were they a 42% team coming in from three, they shot 41% of their shots on the season were threes. But in this game, they only got – we ran them off the line. Michigan ran them off the line. Mm-hmm. They only shot 30% of their shots from three, and then they weren't great shots, I mean, by and large. They were 4-17 from three, and that was really the game. So I completely agree with that.
Yeah,
I think – the Purdue game is, on the offensive side is interesting because what Painter can't cover up is the fact that Haas is so slow. And so when he hedges, it's wide open threes. When he doesn't hedge – you got Xavier playing against a chair, and that's essentially what happened in the game. And there's nothing that Painter can do to make that better when he's on the court. And so it was, as much respect as I have for Painter, and I think we all do, he just had this this major liability, and
he went 9 of 12 for the floor.
Right.
No, on the offensive end, he's not a liability, but on the defensive end, he is. And on the, to Mark's question, I think it is a combination. I mean, Xavier Simpson is probably the best defender at point guard I've seen, and I saw Gary Grant play.
At Michigan.
And I think, at Michigan, that's what I mean.
You're giving him more than Gary Grant.
I don't remember Gary Grant, so I agree.
Well, you guys don't remember, but that's the only one I can think of to compare. Matthews is a good defender. Teske is an excellent defender.
And a major upgrade, which I think is important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for pointing that out to me. And Muhammad.
You know, Mark Dunow is not going to be sending you any Christmas cards.
Well, it's
right.
True. That's all I can say is every time we got in the game, they went right at him and for buckets. And nobody does that to John Teske.
I agree, and I give you your due on this one, Brian. And Muhammad is a good defender, and Duncan, as the season went on, got to be a better and better defender, particularly as a post-up defender. So, some of this is coaching, but really a lot of it is personnel, too. We just have guys who can play defense.
Well, and Mo became a very good defensive rebounder after being a mediocre player.
Yeah.
And I think that's mostly Mo, because he went to the NBA Combine, and they're like, you got to do some other things other than shoot threes. And he's put in the work. He's a much bigger body this year. So I think personnel is definitely part of it because, you know, Walton was a good defender, but I don't think he ever had the upside Simpson does.
No.
Teske's a major upgrade. He's a major upgrade on Mo.
And then you look at individual improvement. I mean, you know, Mo has become a better defender. He's not great. Duncan Robinson has turned into a decent. I can't qualify it, man.
Decent, which is amazing. But it's like 50-50, I'd say. It's 50-50 system individual improvement.
We got to get to a break. We'll come back on the other side. Get to more of your phone calls, emails, and tweets here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, the ticket. Let's get to the phones at 734-998-1050 and talk to Jay in Atlanta. Jay in Ann Arbor, excuse me. Jay, what's up?
Yeah. How you doing?
Doing great.
Good.
Hey, good call on the tournament, man. I learned something. That was good. I got a question. Have you talked to Beilein about his plans for getting these guys to tighten up on free throws? Cause, like, I have some concern. I have some matchup concerns in a tournament, especially like against a Big 12 team like West Virginia, who plays pressure D the whole game. If you get to the free throw line and you're tired, especially the way we've been shooting, it doesn't look good.
I mean, guys, I don't know. They're doing everything. There's no shortage of work. They've even tweaked the routine for Xavier Simpson. That's a shining example of that. They're paying attention. They're trying to do different things. But there's only so much you can do. What more can you do other than repetition?
That's what you can do.
You can break down the shot and build it back up. You aren't doing that
in season, right?
Yeah, and it's a little bit of an issue at the end of games. Hopefully Michigan will be up by 8, so it won't matter as much.
Yeah, I think what it boils down to, to answer your question, Jay, I think what he tries to do is he gives guys a shot, but I think the rope, how much rope he gives a guy is really dependent upon what he's done in that game. You know, hopefully he'll have a sample space to look at in game to say, hey, you know, Z isn't shooting free throws real well in this game. I might need to sub a Jaron in. Now, he hasn't done that very much at all. And same thing with Charles Matthews. But the only way that I think you deal with it right now is if you feel like a guy isn't going well in a particular game, you sub him. And they're deep enough now where you can sub them. You're going to lose something defensively.
Yeah.
And you're going to lose something in terms of attacking as far offensively with Xavier Simpson on the bench. But it might be worth it in games that are tight where maybe he isn't hitting his free throw. So.
Yeah, and you've seen Jordan Poole come in for Xavier one down the stretch of one of these games, and I think that's good because Rockham handles the ball.
Right.
And you should be fine. But, hypnosis, right, Craig?
Hypnosis is what I believe in, but I doubt if it's what Beilein believes in.
You also believe in a one-person bench.
And the rest doesn't matter.
I believe in some of that. That's true. But in terms of free throw shooting, I don't know if there's any instant fix at this point. I mean, we're one of the worst. We may be the worst major college free throw shooting team in the country. I'm not sure. I know we're number 327. Overall, at 65.5%, you've got two guys who are going to get to the line who are terrible, and Simpson and Matthews. And
there has been a slight uptick.
So slight uptick.
Xavier's at like 60% since he started his new routine, and I think Matthews is like 65 over his last 30, which isn't much of a sample, but let's cling on to that.
Yeah, I mean it's. you know, will it cost? I mean, I keep thinking this is going to cost us a game. It really, I don't think it really has it? I mean, it pushed us into overtime in the Iowa game, which we didn't talk about.
Well, that was actually Marr missing a front end.
Yeah, it was. That's what I mean. It's the whole team, yeah. And so yeah, it's been problematic all year long. And I'm looking at the list, and I see nobody who's a major team that's worse than Michigan. We're the worst major team. No, Indiana. Indiana's slightly worse than Michigan.
Are they a major
team? Outside of that, it's Ryder and Little Rock and Southwestern Louisiana, North Texas, Army.
Let's get another one in real quick. Yeah. Terry and Ipsy. Terry, you got to make it quick. What's up? Terry, you there?
Here. Oh. Can you hear me?
Yeah, can hear you. Go for it.
What I'm worried about is a team that comes in that on offense can really effectively pass the ball around and move as a team. And also I'm looking for somebody that's got not the smallest small forwards, but the forwards that can be effective in stopping Mo Wagner's dribble drive and can defend him on the three. I think it's critical that our three-point shooting's got to get back to where it normally is on the high side. Somebody shuts that down besides free throws. And I think also on the inside, guys that can really – I'm looking for that small school team that's got a chip on its shoulder that wants to go after the big dog. That, you know, like North Carolina, Charlotte, many moons ago.
I just think this team is not one of those teams that's going to overlook anyone. They got a permanent chip on their shoulder named Xavier Simpson. It's just – I'm not concerned about that. I'm concerned about being in a tight game of free throw shooting. That's what concerns me. So, well, guys, it's been a lot of fun. Let's get one more call in real quick. Jake, what's up?
I was just going to say I'm really excited about this team. If we take it one game, one play at a time, and one moment, I really truly believe that this team can win the national championship. And I think we're 7 freaking days till the NCAA tournament, 176 freaking days till touchdown Michigan. I'll hang up and listen. Go Blue.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jake. Way to make it quick because we are out of time. Coming up next is Inside the Huddle with Michael Spath. By the time we are back together this week, guys, or next week, we're going to be breaking down the bracket. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get you guys' take on seed line. Where you think Michigan's going to be seeded?
Three.
Can we play in Detroit? Is that possible?
It's possible.
Possible, yeah.